This is a commercial-free archive edition of our live radio show that airs every Friday at noon Arizona time on OpenMinds.tv.
Welcome to Open Minds Radio with your host, Alejandro Rojas, former official spokesperson for the Mutual UFO Network. Alejandro has been a UFO paranormal researcher and journalist for nearly a decade and has logged hours in the field investigating the paranormal up close and personal. And now Open Minds Radio presents evidence and the latest news regarding the UFO phenomenon. Here's your host, Alejandro Rojas.
Hello and welcome to Open Minds Radio, where we are bringing the UFO subject into the light of day. This is Alejandro Rojas, and we have another spectacular show today. I'm very excited about our guest, Dr. Paul Davies. You may recognize the name. He has been all over the media. Probably every major media news source has done a story on him, and he is the guy, most of these stories are saying, who will talk to ETs, although he's a skeptic about extraterrestrial visitation. But we'll talk about that. He's got an impressive resume here. Paul Davies is a theoretical physicist, a cosmologist, an astrobiologist, and a best-selling author. He's a director of the Beyond Center for Fundamental Concepts in Science and co-director of the Cosmology Initiative at Arizona State University. He's been getting so much press because he recently spoke at the Pontifical Academy for Science Study Week on Astrobiology at the Vatican and the Royal Society's recent conference on astrobiology. That's a Royal Society in London. And the name of their conference was The Detection of Extraterrestrial Life and the Consequences for Science and Society. So he's been doing a lot of work on philosophizing around the implications of extraterrestrial life, including intelligent life and other forms of extraterrestrial life that might be here right now on the planet, maybe even in your nose. And we'll talk about what the heck he's talking about there. There may be other little green monsters in your nose other than the ones we're more familiar with. So we'll be talking about that. Excited to talk to Dr. Davies because he's also one of our main stories that came out was a conversation between Lawrence Rockefeller and Hillary Clinton, and it was one of his books that Hillary Clinton is holding in one of the pictures. So we'll talk about that more often. But in other news, of course, magazine, our Open Minds magazine, is in the stores, so go and get yours. We've been hearing positive feedback all over the place. And if you know anything about the field of ufology, people criticize the heck out of each other. And it's surprising that I have not heard one negative word about our magazine, so I'm very excited about that. You can go and get that at Barnes & Noble or Borders. Go to your local bookstore and pick that up if it's not there. Then you walk to the counter and demand that they get it or they find the issues or order more. You can also, of course, go find it at openminds.tv. Another event that's coming up is April 30th. This is more of a local type of thing if you're in the Phoenix metro area. But, of course, if you're not, feel free to fly in. We'd love to see you. This is at Vision Quest Metaphysical Bookstore on April 30th at 7 p.m. The Open Minds editorial staff will be at the bookstore to answer questions and to talk about some of the stories in the magazines. They are at 2225 North Scottsdale Road. And again, you can read more about that on our magazine. And I'm really getting excited about Roswell this summer. They always have a big festival the July 4th weekend to celebrate the crash. And the city has asked me to speak, and Open Minds will be being a big part of that. So we're very excited about going out to Roswell, New Mexico, where it all started. But, of course, there's a lot more UFO news going on out there, and we have our news correspondent, Jason McClellan, here to tell us all about it. Hello, Jason.
Good afternoon, Alejandro. Hello, Phoenix, and hello, world. This is your Open Minds News Brief for Friday, April 16, 2010. A New York anthropology professor says that UFOs should be brought into the open as a worthwhile area of study. Professor Philip Hassley feels that the whole subject should be brought out into the open and investigated. Hassley is a member of MUFON, the Mutual UFO Network, and is head of the Western New York MUFON Division. Nearly 50 UFO sightings are reported monthly across New York. Hassley and other MUFON members scientifically investigate these sightings using radar, astronomy, and meteorology. Professor Hassley was quoted as saying, "To say we are UFO believers basically implies we are taking this on faith, and that's not the case. There is plenty of evidence." And it was interesting when I was looking into this story, because I found out just last month Professor Hassley invited one of our friends, Peter Robbins, to be a special guest speaker at that school. And I've noticed a lot more universities and colleges across the country are having special seminars, speakers coming in and discussing this topic. So it's great to see it coming into the academic world and being taken seriously.
Our next guest, Robert Hastings, and I'll talk more about him at the end of the show, he was recently speaking at a university. He speaks at a lot of them, but out in Denver where my cousin goes to. So like you said, there's a lot of that going on. And there are a lot. He is one of many scientists that are not skeptical about extraterrestrial visitation.
It's coming more in the open. It's exciting to see.
I think, Jim.
Good. In other news, Travel and Leisure magazine published a web-exclusive article on their site this week entitled Best Places to Spot UFOs. The web article does a wonderful job giving a short story of UFO activity in 11 different areas around the world, and for each location, a recently reported sighted is listing along with a video clip. We have a link on our website, so I recommend going to openminds.tv to check it out. But Alejandro, you recently put an article up about places with UFO sightings, listing statistical data of the number of sightings and where those are.
Yeah, what I did was I took all of the MUFON reports that have gone online for the last 5 years since they've been online and grabbed some stats from that. So this is mostly it's been kind of anecdotal. You know, I've been called, other UFO researchers are called by the media, where are the hotspots? And we've got to kind of use what we know, what we've heard of, where big things are going on. Same with historian MSNBC. But this is the first time, as far as I know, at least recently, where someone's taken a large database and put that together. And so we can see where the hot spots are. Funny enough, where I was before, Colorado is a hot spot. Nevada, Oregon, where we are right now, Arizona, Indiana, and Michigan are really some of the top hot spot states. So very interesting information.
If you want to see a UFO, check out the website to look at that article and plan your vacation.
Yep, come to Arizona and meet us.
And a story that was all over global media this week. A gigantic fireball lit up the sky above several Midwestern states on Wednesday night. The fireball was visible for 15 minutes, according to the National Weather Service. While streaking through the sky, the object broke into smaller pieces and vanished, followed by a prolonged sonic boom that caused homes and trees to shake. The fireball was seen across parts of Ohio, Missouri, Illinois, Indiana, and Wisconsin. There has been no official word as to what caused the fireball, but some speculate it could have been a meteorite from the Gamma Virginis meteor shower that occurs from April 4 through April 21st.
Yeah, when I walked into the radio station, everybody here was really excited about this one because the videos, of course, are amazing.
The videos are great.
And really, you know, as far as I know, and we'll talk to maybe Paul Davies and see what he knows, scientists aren't completely sure what causes these things to make this huge flash of light just in the sky. I mean, it turned night into day if you've seen some of these videos, and they're all over CNN everywhere.
Alejandro, we have so many news stories, but I am out of time for the news, so everybody should go to openminds.tv and check out the rest of the news stories. There's a lot of news this week, including President Obama outlining his plan for NASA and the additional funding for that. So great stories. Check them out. That's it for the news. There are these stories and more at openminds.tv, your source for UFO-related news. That's openminds.tv. I'm your Open Minds news correspondent, Jason McClellan, and you've been briefed. Back to you, Alejandro.
All right. Thank you, sir. And I'm excited to ask Mr. Dr. Davies about some of these recent news happenings because he does, in his long list of what he does, he's also a physicist, so he should be able to lend some insight into this. And interesting enough, things like this, meteorites and things, are an integral part of his whole concept about extraterrestrial life here on planet Earth. So we'll talk to him more about that coming up after our break. We've got Dr. Paul Davies, very excited about that.
You're You're listening to Open Minds Radio with Alejandro Rojas on KFNX News Talk Radio 1100.
All right, welcome back to Open Minds Radio. I'm your host, Alejandro Rojas, and hopefully soon we'll have Dr. Davies on the line. We're having a few slight issues, I guess some statewide phone issues. This meteorite has created havoc across the country, and they've screwed up our technical issues here. But you know what? Let's talk more about some of what Paul Davies has been up to, and this is interesting. And Jason, you were there in Mexico with me. I talked to Nick Pope, and Nick Pope used to actually work for the Ministry of Defense in Britain investigating UFOs. And of course, you probably noticed we talk about UK UFO sightings a lot, and he's always consulted. And a lot of the stories that you see on the front page of our website, they've consulted Nick Pope on what's going on because, of course, he worked for the government. But I was able to talk to him about the Royal Society and their astrobiology conference. And interesting enough, he said that he was there and he met a lot with the scientists, that during the conference they were very careful not to even bring up the UFO subject whatsoever, but that behind the scenes he was able to have dinner and tea with some of these people. They do a lot of tea breaks out there. And a lot of these scientists were actually willing to speculate and admit that they think there is something to the whole UFO subject.
So they were willing to say that when they were speaking with Nick Pope, but they didn't mention it publicly?
Right. Okay. Only in lunch, behind closed doors, when the public isn't listening, when they're talking amongst each other. He said there was even a lot of talk about UFOs and ETs and stuff like that. So pretty cool, pretty interesting, and which has been my experience. You know, a lot of scientists, especially those who are real scientists, know that there's data there and there's information and that something's going on.
Well, as you've mentioned before, I mean, even though it is becoming more widely accepted, but historically it's sort of been, the topic's been frowned upon and not taken seriously by the scientific community on a larger scale. Mm-hmm. But many of these scientists do take it seriously. They just hesitate to mention it in public settings.
Well, and that allows us to bring up yet another article, because I did write recently, and we need to write something bigger, I think, for the magazine, that scientists are interested in UFOs, and that there are not only scientists interested, a lot of these organizations, like we talk about MUFON a lot, the Mutual UFO Network, it was founded by scientists, and scientists are still a large part of the organization. The story about the trends that we talked about, a scientist who's into UFOs and has been doing studies his whole life, Dr. Bruce McAbee, responded to that. And he's been doing research in this field for decades, and he talked about how he found some similarities, that at first it seems that UFO sightings correspond with population. In other words, where there's more people, there's more sightings. But when you dig deeper, you can see that there are some places where there's an inordinate amount of reports compared to the population. Of course, Colorado and Arizona being two of those states.
That's what I really liked about the article you just put up with the graphs and the statistical data, because you break it down on just purely number of reports and then number of reports as they correspond to population.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that people are interested in trends and hot spots is what are the cities. And I guess we can share that and talk about that. The actual cities that are the hot spots. And here again, what this is based on population. So how many sightings per person? And Stephenville, Texas was the top. That's because some of you may or may not be aware that in January of 2008, there was a sighting in Texas, and I was a big part of this because I was the MUFON PR guy at the time. And the reason I share that, not to pat myself on the back, but to mention that really I used to get calls all the time from rural newspapers, and there was a sighting in their area, and they wanted to know about it. They wanted to know if MUFON knew about it, if we were going to go investigate. I would get them in touch with the local researchers, no big deal. Stephenville is the same one. Angela Joyner from the local paper calls up. No big deal. They've got a sighting out there. I get her in touch with the people. But one thing that was cool is the AP calls then and says, hey, I read this story in Texas. We want to do a story about it. Gave them some information. Lo and behold, even though sightings in rural areas happen all the time, this turned into this huge media frenzy, just humongous. It was almost like the OJ trials with the media that ended up going to Dublin. It was kind of funny because it was the story said UFO researchers from all over the world descend on Dublin. But this was really maybe five or six people from the Texas area where there were at least 50 cameras. There were more cameras there than there were witnesses. Just tons. I was talking to Geraldo and all of these people, Geraldo's people, not Geraldo himself, unfortunately, but his people. They're saying, what should we do? Should we send a camera crew? You know, can we send you a camera and have one of your guys film for us? It was pretty funny. But it became this huge frenzy. And that was a positive thing for this ufology in general because everybody was talking about UFOs. Lots of reports were happening in Stephenville. Lots of people coming forth. So that's why Stephenville was one of the top. But interesting enough, too, is the way media treated Stephenville. They were actually really cool about it. And one of the most amazing things that happened was one of the morning news shows with Al Roker and who's the other guy the girls think is all cute? My mom's in love with this guy, Matt Lauer. They were talking, along with Anne Rice and the others, they're talking about UFOs. And Anne Rice says, do you guys believe in UFO? And Al Roker said, yeah. And she starts laughing. And Al Roker's like, why are you laughing? And she says, because you said you believe in UFOs and you don't. And he said, yes, I do. And she's like, really? Do you think there's ETs coming here? And he said, sure. And Matt Lauer said, you know, that's what we would do. We would fly around and check people out, you know, if we could go to another planet. So why aren't they doing that here? So that was amazing. And then they went into the Stephenville story. So lots of stuff like that where lots of media talking about UFOs in a positive way. In fact, one of our stories we posted recently from Australia, there was a news piece to this where the news anchors, all very lovely people, are talking about this UFO sighting that happened. And as soon as the UFO story, usually there's their banter. That's usually when they make fun. And the anchor here, you know, this pretty blonde lady says, well, that was definitely a real UFO. And the other anchor says, yeah, you're probably right. You know, that had to be real. And then she says to another anchor, well, you believe in this stuff, right? Was that a UFO? And he says, definitely. You heard it from me. That was a real UFO. So they were all really positive about this. I think it's starting to be where it's like, it's okay, you know. When the cool kids start saying they believe in UFOs, it's okay for the other kids. Because really, as adults, nothing changes that much from high school to now. We're all looking at what the cool kids say. So that's my little diatribe on Stephenville. But another interesting fact, and this really blew me away, was that the number two city for a hotspot was Wilmington, Delaware. It's the biggest city in Delaware, but still, I've never heard of UFOs in Wilmington. I've never even heard much about anything in Wilmington.
I haven't either.
Yeah, so I was really surprised. Maureen, you know, our excellent marketing director who works on our website and everything, actually Googled UFOs in Wilmington, and she found a bunch of stuff there where they're having people talk and everything. So there was something there, but that was really interesting. Number three on the list was Las Vegas, and that's not too surprising. People are pretty loaded out there, of course, all the time, but it's also very close to Area 51.
Yes.
So, and people have been able to see things flying over Area 51 from Las Vegas. And if you're not aware, Area 51 really is a top secret base. In fact, we don't really know the name necessarily of the base. Area 51 is just one that we kind of gave it, but it's at Groom Lake, we as ufologists. It's in the Groom Lake area. And a local researcher, George Knapp, was really who put Area 51 on the map. He's actually a news anchor for the news out there in KLAS in Las Vegas. And he talks about UFOs, does a lot of great UFO research. So he really got that out there. And one of the things he talks about, which is what we were talking about on the way over here, were the white jets, the unmarked jets that fly the personnel who live in Las Vegas to Area 51 on a daily basis. Their commute is getting on this jet and flying over to this secret base. So really interesting stuff. So Las Vegas isn't too much of a surprise. The other two top five before we have to take our next break here was Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, which is not too surprising. We had John Venture on, who was the state director in Pennsylvania. They've had a flap with a lot of sightings going on over there. And then number five was where I just came from 10 months ago, Denver, Colorado, which could be because Denver, or at least Colorado, is where MUFON is based. So Denver press covers MUFON quite often, lots of researchers out there. So that could be a factor.
I'm sure it is, and probably, you know, with Stephenville and with the Phoenix Lights, I'm sure places that have mass sightings, you know, because they get more media attention, more people have the sightings, they start actually looking up and watching the skies.
Right. Yeah, I think you're right about that. It gets in the press. People know to report in the first place, because who knows that you can report UFOs to anybody.
Right.
A lot of people don't know that at all. So, and a lot of these places are in the Southwest, where there are a lot of these supposed secret bases and top secret military stuff is going on.
And by the way, people can report their sightings to us at openminds.tv.
Exactly. I'm glad you put that in there. So we're going to see what's going on. Hopefully we can get Davies on the phone. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with Open Minds Radio.
This is Open Minds Radio. Here again, your host, UFO paranormal researcher and journalist, Alejandro Rojas.
Welcome back. This is Alejandro Rojas, and you are listening to Open Minds Radio. Unfortunately, phone lines are still down, so if you're trying to call in, you're not going to get it, including if you're our guest. So luckily, we talked to Dr. Davies, a very wonderful and charming man, and he is going to reschedule with us, but we have always got lots of news. Just like Jason said, he could have gone on all kinds of news, but we ran out of time, so we will be able to tell you now about that news that we weren't able to get to before. And another story we just put up yesterday on our website, which is one that has been out there a lot, but not from the UFO angle, even though it's a big UFO story. And essentially the story is, what did UFO hacker really find? So speaking of the UK yet again, this was a hacker who started actually hacking back in the 90s. And there's some funny stuff here that I think people don't know. He started hacking back in the 90s. He's actually Scottish. And he decided he wanted to look into UFOs and free energy. He was really into Dr. Greer and the Disclosure Project, and if you're aware of that, you know, Stephen Greer got a ton of witnesses. These are credible witnesses, military or people who are high level in the private sector working at defense companies or maybe working as defense contractors, and they were in the know for UFOs, even FAA, ex-military, so a lot of very credible people. And his story was that not only have the government been able to discover extraterrestrial technology, but that they're suppressing the technology around free energy, and that's because of the economic problems that it may cause, people not making money off of oil. And if you go and you read some stories about oil, really it is kind of the negotiating tool that is used in foreign policy a lot of times. So that's a story that he was able to discover from talking to a lot of witnesses. Gary McKinnon got really excited about this and decided, well, nobody's really looking where you need to look, and that's in the secret systems on the Internet, which, of course, you're not supposed to do. So he hacked in. Funny enough, his hacking technique, he was able to find a program that was able to tell him the computers which hadn't gotten passwords yet. So, you know, you go to work and your IT guy is harassing you to death to create a password, you know, maybe even change your password every 90 days. Well, believe it or not, there are people doing top secret work who are not creating passwords on their computer. And so Gary McKinnon was able to get into these computers. It reminds me of, it wasn't Airplane, but it was a show like it, where the main character, who's the guy with the white hair on those shows?
There's only one?
Leslie Nielsen. Thank you, Chet, the entertainment guy. Leslie Nielsen goes up to a computer to hack into it, and he puts login for login and password for password and is able to get in. So the same kind of thing. He gets into these computers looking for UFO stuff. And really the question that I had, and I think most people in the UFOs area has, is, well, what did he find? So I tried to put all that together in one story. Supposedly he found two major things, or at least that he felt was major. He was able at the Johnson Space Center to download a picture, or at least view a picture on his computer, of what he said was a UFO, a large UFO over the planet that looked like a huge cigar. And this picture was something like 200 megs. It was real high quality. And it was so large in file size that it was difficult for him to look at. And before he got a chance to save it, he was disconnected. Someone found out he was looking. And he said this happened often where, you know, once the person comes back to their computer and sees him on the computer, they kick him off of it. The other thing that is more interesting that he was able to find, which he thought was his ace in the hole to actually get off the hook with the government, was he found a roster of ship changes, so ship transfers, and this roster had a listing of non-terrestrial officers. He thought that that meant, he doesn't believe that that meant little green guys that we've recruited into our military, but people who were stationed off-planet on perhaps secret spaceships out there, or maybe base on the moon that is top secret that we don't know about, which, who knows? I mean, I guess it's entirely possible.
Well, he even found the names of the ships, right, that were transporting these people?
Well, allegedly. I've looked at all of his interviews. I've looked at everything out there on him to try to find the names of the ships. There are a couple interviewers who asked him, what were the names of the ships? His response in both cases was, I was too stoned when I was hacking, so I can't remember because I was usually drinking a beer and smoking a joint when I was hacking these these computers, so he can't remember. However, a couple of UFO researchers have said that he has mentioned the name, although I haven't found a source for this at all. He says, or they say, that the names of the ships were the USSS, an extra S on there, LeMay, and USSS Hillenkoetter, assuming the extra S is United States Spaceship, perhaps. Yeah. Those names would be interesting. LeMay, General Curtis LeMay, was someone who supposedly was in the know. Senator from Arizona, Barry Goldwater, was into UFOs, and he asked his friend General LeMay, what's going on at Wright-Patterson? Isn't there a blue room where you have UFO stuff? And General LeMay, and I think I have the quote here, got really upset and told him, not only can't you get into it, but don't ever mention it to me again. So kind of alluding to maybe something was really going on. And Goldwater was so into this and getting UFO information out that he told the world about it. And as people, I'm sure listeners know, Barry Goldwater was a famous senator, very conservative. The other ship named Hillenkoetter, presumably, is after Admiral Roscoe Hillenkoetter, who was actually the first director of the CIA, and he was very into UFO disclosure as well for a period of time. He joined a very popular UFO group called NICAP, the National, I forget the name here, I'll look it up, I got it right here, but the National Investigation Committee on Aerial Phenomena, and this was a group of mostly military men. Major Donald Kehoe is the guy who ran it, but it was mostly military people who started this group, and they were into UFO disclosure. In fact, the New York Times reported that Hillenkoetter had sent a letter to the Congress, that had said, behind the scenes, high-ranking Air Force officers are soberly concerned about UFOs, but through official secrecy and ridicule, many citizens are led to believe that unknown flying objects are nonsense. However, after a period of time, he stopped talking. He stopped associating himself with NICAP, stopped talking about UFOs, and there are secret documents that have been leaked. Nobody knows if these are real documents or not. There's rumors that this group called Majestic 12 is out there to manage the UFO situation for the government, and he is listed as one of those members of MJ-12, the Majestic group. So some people think that maybe in order to shut him up, the president said, hey, if you're so interested in UFOs, why don't you help us manage the situation, and had him join this group. There is some evidence that this group existed, a few official documents that have been retrieved through Freedom of Information Act requests that this group may have existed. But those were the things that Gary McKinnon had said, and we've only got a few seconds before our next break, but just to, this was the funny part, this information that McKinnon had, he thought he was going to be able to get off. The government, when they busted him, said, hey, we're going to put you in jail for 3 to 4 years if you just say it, you know, that you did it. And he said, no, because I've got information, what you guys really are hiding, and if you don't let me off the hook, I'm going to tell the world. Well, they weren't too afraid of it. So they said, fine, tell the world, and we'll just take you to court and send you to jail for 70 years. So unfortunately, it backfired. He's revealed to the world his secrets, which was this non-terrestrial roster. So the government wasn't too worried about what he had to tell the world. Now he's told the world. Coming up after our break, we'll talk more about this. We'll talk more about NASA and Obama, and we've got some other great stories. So stay tuned. We're going to go to break right now, and then we'll be back with Open Minds Radio.
Welcome back to Open Minds Radio. Here now, former official spokesperson for the Mutual UFO Network, your host of Open Minds Radio, Alejandro Rojas.
Hello, people. This is Alejandro, and you're listening to Open Minds Radio. The phone lines are not working, and it's affecting our internet, too, if you're trying to look at the stream. But luckily, they can't stop the airwaves, so we are still broadcasting. And you've still got some great people, great guests here to talk to. We've got Jason, our news correspondent, to talk to as well. And he had mentioned earlier that Obama has some new policies around NASA, and so I was going to ask Jason if he could elaborate on that.
I certainly can. You know, this isn't completely new news. A while ago, Obama announced that he was going to cancel the Constellation program.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was the return to the moon, the lunar program. But yesterday, President Obama detailed a new NASA strategy for deep space exploration, and he plans to pump $6 billion into NASA, increasing their funding, $6 billion over the next 5 years, and wants to shift the focus away from lunar missions to far space missions,
mm-hmm.
looking at going to Mars, actually, doing Mars missions. And cool. The cool thing is that the private sector and commercial space industries are now being this is all opened up to private people, private companies, to develop propulsion systems and things that will help take us farther into space. And yesterday, the president said, referring to the moon, we've been there before. There's a lot more space to explore and a lot more to learn when we do. And while I think deep space exploration is cool and I like the idea, I sort of disagree because I think there's a lot more still to be learned from the moon. We haven't really explored it all that much.
Yeah, and you know, a lot of those scientists talk about how really in order to get to Mars, the best thing would be, like you see on a lot of sci-fi, is to build a base on the moon. It has lower gravity, and it's better to launch from there.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's good to look at moving on, but mm-hmm. we really haven't finished what's closer to us already.
Yeah. Unless these days there is a quicker trip to go from here to Mars. Who knows?
Who knows? But it'll be cool to see what the private sector can come up with.
That's what I'm excited about.
And even the near space stuff that Virgin Galactic has been working on with the space travel for tourists, space tourism.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, this is a side note, but I just noticed that, or just learned about, Virgin also has underwater ships that they've recently built.
Oh, really?
They have underwater planes.
Weird. Interesting. That's cool.
So that guy's all over the place with his exploration. I think it's pretty cool. I'd like to go on an underwater voyage in a plane.
Yeah. Well, that's what I'm excited about, is that if more money is pumped into the private sector, that those will help bring along the public, you know, facing or accessible programs, such as going into space as soon as next year.
Right.
For $200,000, you'll be able to go into space. And those prices, I'm sure, will drop over time. You know, how long is it going to be, especially if there's funding pumped into it, till you could take a trip to the moon and spend, you know, a week in a Bigelow resort on the moon?
You know, it sounds crazy, but it's not that far off. I think it's coming right around the corner. But
probably, except it'd be on the moon.
A bed and breakfast on the moon. I don't know.
Breakfast 24 hours.
But, you know, with the space flights being passed off basically to private sector, NASA is spending more of their efforts doing missions here. And, you know, I mentioned underwater. That's another thing that, you know, while we're looking at far space exploration, there's still so much right here on Earth that we don't know about.
Mm-hmm.
They're always discovering things in the ocean. There's so much of the ocean that we haven't been to yet.
Well, I think we've only explored, I think they've said, 10% of the ocean. So every time they go down into the deep trenches, they find dozens of new animals and beings and weirdness. And
right.
The shapes and configurations of those things are incredible.
So my mind swirls with deep space. But again, you know, with the ocean right here, I think it'd be cool to explore more here.
That reminds me of another news story that is related to what we're talking about, and that is going to the planet Europa, or the moon Europa. The moon Europa, and I believe it's Jupiter's moon?
I think so.
Is covered in ice, so they believe it's an ocean type of planet, that there's oceans under there. And so they have recently developed a robot that they've drilled a hole and put this robot under the ice in the Antarctic. So it can explore, and it goes down and checks the temperature and everything. And sure enough, they put it in these places where they didn't think there would be life. And every time we go check out some area where you don't think there's life, but sure enough, just like in the trenches in the middle, the mid-Atlantic ridges, where they didn't think there could be life, there are crabs and shrimp and things like that there. But this is kind of the beginning of being able to send something to Europa to check under the ice there. And it seems like, I mean, more and more the chances of life being out there, something, some weird type of creature swimming in the water, could be pretty high.
Right. Where there's water, that's where you're going to find life.
That's what they say. Pretty dang exciting.
Yep.
And now different scientists are saying that perhaps they don't need to be water-based. That life could be attached to other types of things, like arsenic even, things that are poisonous to us, could actually be something that life thrives off of in other places.
Or in our noses.
Or in our noses, and we didn't get to that. And I guess I'll just have to at least give you a little bit of information, but essentially just talking about how microbial life, that meteor, that fireball that came, let's say it's a meteor, it could have been a chuck from another planet. It could have bacteria from another planet that is now here and that then flourishes and goes around and perhaps even causes colds or different issues such as that. And that's why Davies was talking about the extraterrestrials in our noses, the little green men in our nose.
I believe that, especially after how I feel sometimes coming back from Mexico.
Yeah. Oh, good Lord. Some sort of foreign bacteria certainly did a number on me coming back from Mexico. Other great stories that we can talk about, though, because there are a ton of really cool things going on out there. Of course, like we talked about, there's tons of sightings out in the UK. And this was a really interesting one that we didn't get to talk too much about, but we did touch upon, which is the sheep. I've been talking to Nick Pope, we talk about again. I mean, he's an authority, someone who worked for the government looking into UFOs. And I asked him, what about all these UFOs in the UK? And the just tremendous increase in reports in 2009. He said that One of the reasons the reports are probably increasing is the popularity of using these Chinese lanterns, which are these little red lanterns you put a flame in and they float around. And lots of people are reporting orange orbs. However, to contradict the idea that maybe all these Chinese lanterns are orange orbs, in the UK, they've had a problem with sheep being mutilated. And so there was a researcher who staked the area out, and sure enough, he saw orange orbs. Him and many other witnesses saw orange orbs that were beams down on the sheep. And then that morning, they were finding their sheep mutilated. Just like here, strange things, tiny little holes, and the brain somehow removed out of these tiny little holes. Organs carefully removed from the sheep. A lot of what we find out here in cattle mutilations, and we had Chuck Zukowski from Colorado talking about that not too long ago. So really interesting. Don't you have anything to say about that?
I already talked about that, and I don't like to bring it up because I have the visuals in my head. I've seen the pictures of this stuff, and it's really sad.
I know. We were putting together this story together for the magazine, and I sent over some pictures of sheep, and they, you know, they're so cute, but especially these tiny little baby sheep on the UK, you know, walking around, and they're just adorable as heck, almost as cute as my little chihuahua.
Pretty close. Pretty close.
They looked a lot like your dogs, though. What kind of dogs are those?
Maltese.
Maltese, yeah, the cutest little dogs, the little Maltese. So, and I guess, you know, we don't have a lot of time left, but the last thing we could plug is Eric Von Daniken, someone we met out in Mexico. Great guy, been a researcher for a long time in ancient astronauts and possible evidence of extraterrestrial visitation in ancient artwork and stuff like that. Yesterday, or on the 14th, he just turned 75 years old.
Holy cow, he looks great.
Yep. Well, that's it for Open Minds Radio today. We will be coming back next week, and we'll have a guest. Maybe we'll get Dr. Davies for next week. If not, we're going to have Robert Hastings talking about UFOs visiting nuclear sites. Either way, it's going to be an awesome show. Visit openminds.tv for more information, and we'll talk to you next week, people.
Can't smell a thing. Do you watch your feet?